Missed an episode of your favorite podcast? Choose from over a decade of content in our archives. Not just the latest episode. All free at GCNlive.com.
What a wild weekend as we kick off the beginning of May here on America Tonight. Hey, everybody, hope you had a fabulous weekend. Not too great for one community feeling like they were under siege just outside of Dallas, Texas. Two guys opening fire outside of a crazy contest for Prophet Muhammad cartoons were shot by police on Sunday night. The two guys drove up, got out of their car, and began shooting at this Muhammad art exhibit and cartoon contest as it was wrapping up inside. It was coming to an end. So an unarmed security guard was shot in the leg. He was treated, released from the hospital. That's the good news there. The cops who were helping with security at the event fired back immediately, right? What a crazy event. Anyway, and killed both of the guys with guns. The first suspect shot, boom, immediately. The second suspect was wounded, reached for his backpack, then he was shot again. So now all of this was unfolding, and their identities aren't released right away. But can you imagine the excitement, not the good kind of excitement, that that caused in a pretty busy area? Because you got a lot of giant businesses there. A Walmart, huge Walmart, was evacuated, and this cultural center is pretty big. And immediately when that happened, the word was set off, and it's crazy because the event was sponsored by the American Freedom Defense Initiative, which is really considered an anti-Muslim group by the Southern Poverty Law Center, if you wanted to try to tackle that, right? And they go after hate groups, of course. The group is saying that, you know, why this? They specifically picked the venue because it's a public school-owned place. And it was to, they say they were doing it to denounce Islamophobia in January. That's when that whole thing came up, right? So the Sunday night deal invited cartoonists to send in cartoons of the Prophet Muhammad. They said they got about 350 different people who entered, and the winner was going to win 10 grand. So there were a lot of people there. There were like 250 people or so at that event, and most of the people that came there were actually from out of state or nearby states or whatever, but not too many Texans actually. So the security was incredibly tight. They brought in the extra cops. It's a good thing they did, because look what happened. So details about the two guys, their religion, their motive, they don't know any of that kind of stuff now. But imagine Prophet Muhammad. I mean, that's like blasphemy by Muslims. So where does your mind automatically go, right? And supposedly this is what that whole deal was. Oh, we're throwing it in your face, meaning we're doing the opposite of the whole hate thing. But it has shades of what happened at Charlie Hebdo, which of course was the famous French satirical mag that had that history of depicting Muhammad in it, and we know the history there, the sad, sick killing of the 12 people. But the shots that were fired there, it seems like it could be, to me, some kind of a lone wolf, probably, attack. But who knows? I don't want to jump to any conclusions there. Hey, speaking of jumping to conclusions, how about the crazy thing that happened into the weekend to Baltimore? Wow. You have police officers charged now. You have the people in Baltimore who are, some of them protesting peacefully, but it's like a bigger match was kind of lit. The fuse was lit there, as we know, over a week ago. You're going to hear the mom from on this show. You're going to hear the mom, Toya Graham, who went after her son to get him out of the fracas the other day when he was going to throw a brick and was going to be part of that whole thing. And of course, by now, everybody knows that whole story. She was on Greta Van Susteren, and I happened to catch that. And it was good, the little exchange there. I wanted you to hear what she had to say. And then also, looking at the what's happening in Baltimore and the comments that are pouring in from people who I think when I say lit the flame or make the fuse that much of a juicier target, you'd be surprised at some of the people who are really, really making it worse in the Freddie Gray case situation, right? And there's just so much that doesn't add up there. The Baltimore mayor announces, boom, this is the end of the citywide curfew. I think the charges with the cops surprised some of the police investigators who looked into what happened there. Remember initially some of the things that we had heard? And the investigators for the Baltimore Police Department are saying they worked forever to make sure there was a quick resolution in what happened with, you know, Freddie Gray, how he died after he was taken into police custody. And they say they were caught off surprise when the state attorney, Marilyn Mosby, announced charges against the six cops on Friday morning. I mean, heading into the weekend, I think people were blown away by that. So, as a result, everybody is digging all over the place, and the Baltimore police say they're going to keep up the task force and do whatever they can, that they're fighting fatigue and they're trying to, you know, work through it. But the manpower that they've thrown at this, so, you know, imagine the police department just saying they stood just in complete shock, blindsided, as they listened to the charges, including second degree, depraved murder, and whatnot. So it's what's happening in Baltimore, while the curfew goes away, it's the mood and the attitude, and what's happened there certainly just continues to create a wall of separation, I think, and contrast between a lot of people. And there are many of you had stuff to say in the mailbag, which of course we'll get to the mailbag this hour of America Tonight, complaining on all angles about it, complaining that whose fault is it, and is this the media's fault because the media is jumping all over it in the same direction, and who do you blame for this, and is it smart to end the curfew, and how troubling is it that we have two different ideas of how this went down, meaning two investigations and two very different outcomes just a couple of days apart. And even the famed attorney Alan Dershowitz is saying that the Baltimore police case has a lot of problems with it. He's saying this is not cut and dry by any chance, by any stretch of the imagination. It's not as it appears. So, you know, what does that mean? And, of course, we're going to look at it. Were you stunned? I mean, there's a good question. Rolling into the weekend, were you stunned to hear the police being charged in Freddie Gray's murder? Or no, you thought, you know, something is not adding up here, and perhaps this is part of the problem. I'm going to throw out the digits, 855-266-5283, 855-266-5283. Stick with us, more on what happened in Baltimore. Plus, hey, did you know there was a big fight over the weekend? Richest fight in history, but was it really worth investing the time to watch what they call the fight? Hang through. Have you ever heard of a pharmacist who discourages the use of most prescription drugs? Well, pharmacist Ben Fuchs is that person, and boy, is he fascinating. He's a nutritional pharmacist and skincare specialist who operates out of Boulder, Colorado. And to hear this man speak is nothing less than inspiring, because he's charismatic and makes a lot of sense. He asks, why take dangerous drugs when all your body needs to stay healthy is all natural with no side effects? Pharmacist Ben sees the human body as a healing and regenerating system, divinely designed to heal and renew itself on a moment-to-moment basis. but it needs nutrition and nutritional supplementation. Ben says you've got to be on a nutritional supplement program if you want to be healthy in 21st century America, and he wants to help people get off the toxic drug treadmill and get on a good nutritional supplement program. I support what pharmacist Ben is saying and doing to help America get healthier, and I urge you to watch and listen to Ben deliver his powerful message at your convenience. Just go to AmericaTonightTeam.com. That's AmericaTonightTeam.com.
Gold is like nothing else on Earth. From the Romans through the Renaissance, from the Industrial Age to the Space Age, gold has weathered the test of time. For 6,000 years, gold has remained the ultimate store of wealth. According to the World Gold Council and the U.S. Mint, demand is at an all-time high. The stage is being set for the reemergence of gold as the common sense alternative to a fiat paper currency that gets weaker every day. Midas Resources is proud to offer the hard-hitting report that arms you with the truth you need to protect you and your family from the Fed's plans for your hard-earned money. Don't gamble with your future. Call Midas Resources today and ask for your free copy of As Good as Gold. Call 1-800-686-2237 for the report the Fed hopes you'll never see. As Good as Gold can be yours by calling 800-686-2237. If you have ever thought about owning gold, you must read this report. Call Midas today at 800-686-2237.
It's time to build your own emergency food stockpile with the industry leader, My Patriot Supply. Once you try them, you'll know why so many Americans like you have made them part of their emergency preparedness plan. Experience the My Patriot Supply difference today with this unbelievable offer. Right now, a 4-week food supply is only $99, and that includes free shipping. That's 50% off the online price. Call 800-274-3070 to claim yours. Limit 2 per caller while supplies last. This offer isn't available online, so you want to make sure and grab this opportunity to get prepared today. 800-274-3070 to get your 4-week food supply for the incredible price of only $99, and it'll be shipped to you completely free. Call 800-274-3070 right now. That's 800-274-3070 to claim yours while supplies last. Don't wait. Call today.
Whoa, you know, you know, you know, you know, you must have been a beautiful baby. You must have been a beautiful child. When you were only starting to go to kindergarten, I bet you drove those other childs wild. Oh, yeah, oh, yeah, oh, yeah, when it came to winning Blue River. Well, I bet you taught the other kids how. Well, I can see the judge's eyes as they handed you the prize. I bet you took the cutest bow. Yeah, you must have been a beautiful baby.
All right, coming up on America Tonight as part of the weekly re-rack, some of the best interviews of the week. A conversation with a woman from UNICEF who tells us about the efforts to help in Nepal, which is just... the poor people in Nepal, it gets worse and worse. Wretched choices for those folks who are without clean water in most cases. There's a lot of relief efforts in that direction, but you can't land at the airport. They're having all kinds of problems as you normally would when you've got ruins all around you, and that's the situation in Kathmandu and all the nooks and crannies in Nepal, but especially in and around Kathmandu, and it's unbelievable some of the stories of courage and Good Samaritan ship, I'm going to call it that, because, yes, of course, and when there's a crisis, people reach out, but, I mean, people doing unbelievable things. But how difficult it is to rally, to get what you need to get somewhere. And specifically when we talked to Lisa Sarkowski, what I thought was so fascinating is the fact that there are drop areas, like in Copenhagen, there's a center where you have material that you can get out to the people when there's any kind of a natural disaster. But what happens is kids need some stability. So how do you get kids back to school? And oftentimes, and they call it school in a box, there could be nothing but ruins around them, but they're having school to try to bring them back to normal because it's so difficult for the children to manage those feelings. And often the, you know, sad amount of loss and grief that they're dealing with. So you'll find this fascinating, how they try to move as much material around as they can, and just how difficult it is to, you know, coordinate all of that. So I mentioned at the top that with Baltimore, it's about reaction to Baltimore. I mean, what is your reaction now that these police officers have been charged? Is it completely different than what we were talking about last week? Do you think there's still so much more that we don't know? And I think the answer is there's still so much more we don't know. Some people think that the prosecutor jumped to conclusions and that the charges are wrong. And then, of course, other people feel like, oh, this is exactly what was, you know, should have happened in the first place. So I'm going to throw out the digits, 855-266-5283, 855-266-5283. And the reaction, for example, like that of Morgan Freeman, who, I mean, I think he is a tremendous actor. There's no question about it, right? I mean, how many movies have you seen where Morgan Freeman has either been the main character or just a side character or a character actor in whatever role it is, and he's taken over the big screen? Well, he criticized the media for offering all the sensational commentary over the news, but particularly, he says, in the context of the protests in Baltimore and Ferguson. But he went deeper than that. You know, he talked about the police officers and talked about, you know, being black in America. And the what he said fired up a lot of people. I mean, a lot of people who were like, wow, I love Morgan Freeman, but he is way off base with what he's saying in, you know, about Baltimore. And that goes back to that whole, are black men being targeted? Are white police treating black suspects differently? And that's why you hear Ferguson, I don't have to spell it out for you, how some of the other things that have happened where somebody's died and it turns out they were unarmed or whatever it was, where that's all been put into this same pile. So what's going on in Baltimore, I hope it eases up this week, and that's why the curfew boom is dropped aside, because it's ridiculous no matter what has to be sorted out for the people to loot and destroy property in their own city. I mean, the kids, whatever, whoever's involved, it's just wrong, and it does the damage in so many other different directions. So Freddie Gray, the Baltimore mayor, lifting the curfew 6 days after the riot, and the debate continues. When we check the mailbag at the end of the hour, you'll hear what so many had to say, which a ton of people are weighing in on that. And what do you make of what I mentioned at the top? Two guys with guns killed outside of a Prophet Muhammad cartoon contest in Texas, where the winner was going to walk away with $10,000. There was heavy security there in the first place. The idea of the brazenness, some would say, of the Prophet Muhammad cartoon contest is that, hey, this is America, and this is about not being Islamic phobic. And that was the idea behind sponsoring and putting it on, and look what happens. So who were the guys? Was the lone wolfish kind of, you know, tinges of that? Or is there something else at work here that we're, you know, we have no idea what it is at this point, but this is, you know, what they're trying to tie up the knots of, okay, so who is it? Why do they do that? What pushed them into opening fire outside of what was going on inside? And you know, you jump to those conclusions. There's a couple of different ways you could take that. And that's why they're being really, really careful. Meaning they, meaning the authorities, the law. They're being really careful what they're saying about what happened outside of Dallas. They're being really, really careful about it, because they don't want to have problems of their own, of somebody weighing in the wrong direction and assuming something, you know, assuming something there. As we continue to zig and zag in a couple of different directions, I'd be remiss not to mention this as we take a hard turn from what's happening in Baltimore to part of the conversation around the water cooler buzz over this big fight, Manny Pacquiao and Floyd Mayweather. I actually had a couple of stations across the country that wanted me to comment on it because they're looking for all kinds of people to throw in their two cents about the fight game. And it's interesting because to me, I just always think back as a kid, remember hearing people talk about some of the great heavyweight fights and how to see some of those heavyweight fights, you would have to stay up way past your bedtime. Back before there was this massive control called, let's make you pay for it, for serious bucks, let's make you pay for the privilege to watch whatever fight. And the richest payday, certainly for Floyd Mayweather, who had more to lose than Manny Pacquiao. If Manny Pacquiao had won, I guarantee there would have been a rematch. But can you imagine this? So pretty much Mayweather gets $100 million for that fight. $100 million. 12 rounds it went. And he's a perfect 48-0 with 26 knockouts on his resume. Not a knockout this time. It was I think it was absolutely a definitive win for Mayweather. But what does it say about boxing? As I mentioned before, it was about the knockout. It was about the pound-for-pound blows that you would see. And I don't think that you saw that in that fight. It went the distance, but watching it, I don't think it was one of the greatest, might have been one of the richest, but I don't think it was one of the greatest fights that anybody's ever seen, hardly, by a long shot. If you were going to rank fights, boy, I don't even think it would make it into the, top 10. Except for that people were talking about the fight for so long. And finally, the fight happens. But it wasn't all that. So I'm wondering, if you paid the full amount of money to see Manny Pacquiao take on Floyd Mayweather, were you disappointed in ultimately what you got for your serious do-re-mi? I mean, was it worth it? Was it that big of a fight? Coming up, the fight to save lives in Nepal continues. We're talking to somebody about the UNICEF relief efforts on the flip side here on ATN.
Quantitative easing, unemployment at depression levels, Europe financial system falling apart, China getting out of U.S. treasuries. At the end of 2008, the time of TARP, the national debt was at $11 trillion, gold trading around $850 per ounce. Close to 2012, the national debt exceeded $16.4 trillion, gold doubled to $1,600 per ounce. The $20 trillion threshold for the national debt is inevitable. Politicians in Washington have a ferocious appetite for spending and stimulus. What's worse, a printing press to finance. 100 years ago, we had a gold standard to limit this madness, but now you have to adopt your own gold standard. Don't be fooled with paper promises. Get Midas Resources 10 Reasons to Buy Gold free by calling 800-686-2237. Understanding the gold and silver market may be the only insurance you could have to avoiding the next economic crisis. Call 1-800-686-2237 and order your free copy. Again, that's 800-686-2237.
A little right, a little left, but always independent-minded. The Genesis Communications Network, GCN.
If the IRS has garnished your paycheck or seized money from your bank account, you need to get professional tax help now. Fast action is required to put a halt to these aggressive IRS collection tactics. You can count on the knowledgeable team of tax professionals at Wall & Associates. With over 30 years of experience, Wall & Associates has settled the tax problems of thousands of taxpayers for a small fraction of what they owed. For a free face-to-face consultation, call 1-800-425-4610 to put a wall between you and the IRS. 1-800-425-4610 or look for us on the web at wallandassociates.net. We solve tax problems. If you hire Wall & Associates today, you'll never have to talk to the IRS again. To stop the levies and seizures today, take action now. Call Wall & Associates at 1-800-425-4610. Wall & Associates. 1-800-425-4610.
Based on actual cases, results may vary, not a solicitation for legal services.
Can Heart and Body Extract help with other ailments besides heart conditions, high blood pressure, clogged arteries, or unbalanced cholesterol? It did for Karen.
I've been using Heart and Body Extract for approximately 2 weeks. I've had an earwax buildup problem for many years, with over-the-counter stuff not working at all. I have very poor hearing due to this earwax buildup. Well, after 2 weeks of taking Heart and Body Extract, my earwax buildup almost completely cleared up. Could this be the effect of better body circulation?
Heart and Body Extract is an effective 100% organic nutritional supplement specially formulated to allow your body to heal itself.
My hearing is almost completely back to normal. I'm amazed.
Order by calling 866-295-5305 or online at hbextract.com. That's 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract for a long and healthy life.
It's time to build your own emergency food stockpile with the industry leader, My Patriot Supply. Once you try them, you'll know why so many Americans like you have made them part of their emergency preparedness plan. Experience the My Patriot Supply difference today with this unbelievable offer. Right now, a 4-week food supply is only $99, and that includes free shipping. That's 50% off the online price. Call 800-274-3070 to claim yours. Limit 2 per caller while supplies last. This offer isn't available online, so you want to make sure and grab this opportunity to get prepared today. 800-274-3070 to get your 4-week food supply for the incredible price of only $99, and it'll be shipped to you completely free. Call 800-274-3070 right now. That's 800-274-3070 to claim yours while supplies last. Don't wait. Call today.
The situation that we're seeing in Nepal, I've talked about it. I know many people from the Kathmandu area, as I've spent some time with travel agency where I had some buddies who were placing people in that country and were from there. So we see the death toll and the destruction and how awful it is. And then it's the aftermath and what happens then. Lisa Sarkowski joins us. He's the VP of Humanitarian Emergencies and Executive Communications for the U.S. Fund for UNICEF. Lisa, thanks for spending time with us on America Tonight.
Thanks for having us, and thanks for the coverage you've been providing to this emergency.
So what's the first thing that happens? You know you're going to be called upon, you see some horrific thing happens, and then what's the chain of command? You get a phone call and everybody starts to rally around, because it sure seems like you move mountains very quickly.
Well, unfortunately, or fortunately, depending on how you look at it, you know, we've had a lot of experience in responding to crises throughout the world. And one of the things that's built into UNICEF's response is sort of an analysis at the end of any emergency response and an improvement. And so if there are ways that we learn from past emergencies, for example, in this case, first priority is to make sure staff are okay to the extent that that's possible. And there were very bad communications, as you know. Communications basically were shut down and damaged or destroyed because of the impact of the earthquake. But assuming staff are okay, there's a plan in place to quickly begin to contact partners to mobilize a response. In this case, we have a regional hub right in Kathmandu, so we did have stocks pre-positioned for medical supplies, some water purification and things like that. It was not nearly what would be needed at this scale, but at least there were some stocks ready at hand to just begin distributing in the hours following the earthquake.
So with the medical supplies and the water purification, you know that there's going to be problems with water automatically. And
absolutely,
that's one of the things that you worked on a long time ago, right? I'm sure you've perfected some of those methods.
Absolutely. And, you know, immediate needs right now, of course, there's a life-saving response going on. You've got to obviously try to locate any survivors and then provide medical assistance to those who are in great need. And right in tandem with that life-saving response is the prevention of a secondary catastrophe, which would be the result of waterborne diseases or, you know, lack of hygiene. And people are in open spaces right now. They're living, you know, some, if they're lucky, have a tarp or some sort of a shelter from the sun and the rain, but they're enclosed in places with no latrines or adequate water supply for washing or drinking. And so that obviously becomes critically important, as you note, in the response.
Yeah, how hard is it to get people in there? Because then, of course, that's the other thing, getting other supplies to them. You know, I know a lot of times, especially in remote areas, you have drops. Will it come to that where there's drops in certain areas?
You know, I'm not sure if that would be necessary. Again, it depends. I mean, as you're noting, there are certainly areas that they're not even reaching yet in terms of an assessment because these villages are very rural. Infrastructure has been so damaged. So I wouldn't rule that out. I would say, though, you know, that's not always the best course if you can avoid it because sometimes it's the accuracy is not as good as a delivery would be. And obviously there's going to be a human touch that's needed here as well in terms of medical support and supplies that can't be managed through a drop, if you will.
So when somebody makes an assessment, it can be UNICEF or somebody else, obviously. Is there a channel to get information to you to say, hey, listen, this is what we're seeing, here's what we need, because you have to be able to assess that as well.
Absolutely. Well, the good thing, again, with UNICEF is that we tend to keep statistics in every single country where we work. So when something happens, we know, for example, how many children. We knew the moment this earthquake struck that 40% of the population was children. And so you extrapolate and you figure out, okay, so then our response will be, you know, how many of those children were under five, you know, and how many, you know, we can also figure out roughly how many pregnant women would there be? How many nursing women would there be? And of course, because our focus is women and children, we would then be able to start the supply pipe, to mobilize the supply pipeline, because a lactating woman may have special needs versus, you know, the general population. Same with infants and newborns. We can sort of predict that the moment something like this happens. And anyway, in terms of mobilizing, this all, again, it happens within moments, and it is based on, you know, this longstanding, you know, work in the country, knowing the population, and also having the channels of delivery and partners on the ground who can, you know, get the stuff where it needs to go as quickly as possible. Now, all of us are hampered by, you know, a loss of communications and or a damaged infrastructure. I mean, those are things that are really hard to work around no matter how much experience you have or, you know, how fast you are. But again, there's pre-planning involved, and to the extent we can work around these things, we do, or find alternatives. You know, we're already landing supply planes. We have a global warehouse in Copenhagen that was immediately packing planes with the necessary supplies so that as soon as we were able to land the planes, they were getting in. And again, this is where the priority is, you know, getting these supplies in, you know, making sure there's clearance for humanitarian workers to do what they need to do. Also, I think you raised a good point in that, you know, it's about coordination. You can't just, you have to coordinate. And again, this is skilled people who've been working and to some extent, anticipating disasters. So there has to be a coordinated response. One must be in contact with the government, for example, which is leading the response, and then all of the NGO actors, whether they're international or local, and the UN and UNICEF are schooled in doing this and making sure that, you know, we're not duplicating efforts, that we're complementing what's being done as much as this is possible in the aftermath of such a major, you know, earthquake.
Yeah, that's great, not duplicating the efforts. And you mentioned that in talking about Copenhagen and the supply center and talking about the stocks in the beginning. So having those statistics is so vital, right? All that preliminary work that's been done over the years, because you know to have certain things in certain areas.
Exactly. I mean, and it's funny, I'm glad you're raising this point, because it's sometimes people think it's boring and they don't want to talk about the statistics and the data keeping, because that isn't as, you know, front and center as, you know, delivering water and sanitation and nutrition and healthcare. What is absolutely critical part of what we do. Otherwise, we'd be guesstimating, and that wouldn't be serving children, no matter what the response was. And I can tell you, like, the preliminary assessment was done in coordination with the government, and that has to be coordinated so that everybody's getting the same information. We know that, for example, 80% of schools and health centers were damaged in the regions that were hit, and we know what that's going to mean, not just, you know, today, but 3 months from now. And what are we going to do to mitigate that? You know, kids can't be out of school. People are often surprised to know that one of our frontline responses becomes education, and that's because kids who have endured something like this, number one, the psychosocial benefits of being in an organized setting that's safe, that's therapeutic, that's stimulating, that's with their peers. You know, kicking around a soccer ball has more benefits than you might imagine in the aftermath of something like this, where kids just have that chance to be normal. And you know, by nature, kids are extremely resilient and they can overcome a lot of things, but it's our job to make sure that they have whatever assistance we can provide to normalize this experience as much as possible. You have to kind of put yourself in the mindset of a four-year-old who, like, maybe perhaps saw people die, maybe saw her home collapse, her community, her very community collapses. You imagine that? We talk to our kids and they have nightmares about things, and this is a real-life nightmare for a little kid. I mean, they actually see their structures around them disappear, and then the earth continues to shake with aftershocks, and, you know, all of the grown-ups around them are in distress, and, you know, everything's collapsed. So you have to kind of get down at that level and imagine what it's like. And of course, life saving is first on the list, and preventing a secondary catastrophe. But then right behind that, we have to, you know, and the quicker we do an intervention with psychosocial, we're already doing it, you know, at a mass scale through PSAs and things like that. It's the better the recovery. That's what experience tells us. But certainly education, we do something called school in a box, which is what it sounds like. It's a big metal box. It's everything needed for a temporary classroom that can be set up. And we use these all around the world in the aftermath of a crisis. And it's really meant to be an interim way to get kids into a, even if it's under a tree in the middle of, you know, a debris field, you know, it's a place where kids can go and they start that normalcy and they start having a routine, and the parents can go about trying to do what they need to do and know that their kids are in a safe place and being looked after. I think there's one other thing on the heels of water and sanitation and immunizations and things of that nature, and that's child protection. And again, it's not always something obvious, but with our focus being so you know, narrow on children and what they need, it's obviously in the wake of something like this, and we've seen it in Haiti, we've seen it in other places. You know, it's so easy to separate from a parent when something like this happens. And so we are always extremely concerned about unaccompanied kids and, you know, rounding them up, identifying them, at least for lack of a better way of saying it, you know, almost doing an inventory, if you will, of, and holding on to those kids and keeping them safe until we can reunite them with their parents, if that's possible, and if not, with a family member, what have you. But, you know, there's so many kids who are wandering around, their days, their kids. Some of them can't even speak, and we saw that with Haiti too. You know, they couldn't, they're too young to verbalize who they are, or what happened to them. And, you know, so we've really got to keep a close eye on that and, make sure that we are caring for them, you know, yeah, exactly, until we can get them to a safer place.
Wow, crazy. We're going to give out the numbers and the ways people can help throughout the show. Lisa Zarkowski, UNICEF efforts, thanks so much. Tremendous information. Appreciate it.
No, thank you. Thanks for having us.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
By now you may have heard a bit about bitcoins, but did you know bitcoins are now over an $8.5 billion market? And did you know that over 65,000 businesses now accept bitcoins? Listen, if you're already earning bitcoins or trying to make money in the bitcoin market, you've got to know BidBit.co. Why? Because BidBit.co is where you can easily receive bitcoin by selling and auctioning off your own personal items or promote business products and services for bitcoin. You heard right. Whether personal or business, you can now buy, sell, and auction your product and services quickly, easily, and securely for Bitcoin at BidBit.co, the first and only marketplace website to offer BidBit Escrow, a proprietary technology which gives buyers and sellers security and peace of mind because all transactions are protected. Start today. It's free to join, free to post, free to auction, and free to bid at BidBit.co. Buy, sell, bid, or auction everything Bitcoin. That's www.bidbit.co. BidBit.co.
If you constantly feel run down and tired, your pH level might be low and your body could be full of toxins. If what you drink is not at a pH level of 8 or higher, you are inviting bacteria and acid to thrive in your body. But there is something you can do. Simply add 10 drops of AlkaVision Plasma pH drops to your water to help your body rid itself of acidic waste, increase oxygen, and raise your pH balance to optimum levels. AlkaVision Plasma pH drops combine a unique formula of the most alkaline minerals in the world, alkalizing the water you drink, ridding your body of acidic waste and toxins, and helping you regain energy and vibrant health. And studies show viruses, bacteria, and toxins cannot survive in an alkaline high pH environment. Order your bottle of AlkaVision Plasma pH drops at AlkaVision.com. That's AlkaVision.com. Or call 269-409-1776. 269-409-1776. Alkalize your body. Supercharge your health at AlkaVision.com today.
In 1965, this is the sound. Come here, John. One more time. One more time. One more time. Fantasy. Metal drag. Papa's got a brand new bag.
On down the stretch we go. For this hour of America Tonight with me, Kate Delaney. Remember, all roads lead you to America Tonight, americatonight.net. Over the weekend, American Pharoah, 5-2 favorite for the Kentucky Derby, wins the Kentucky Derby. Now people are talking about this horse as the horse who could win the Triple Crown. But, of course, we haven't seen that since 1978. And the horse was affirmed. It's a great trivia question. Have not seen a horse win all three legs of the Triple Crown. And once the horse wins the Derby, then there's a lot of conversation about could this be the horse that hits the Triple Crown. Now, American Pharoah did exactly what American Pharoah should have done. It won the Arkansas Derby by 8 lengths, came into the Derby as a heavy favorite, had a lot of steam underneath it, looked really brilliant in that race, which is such a long race, and that the Derby now goes to the Preakness, and I would say we'll see. We'll see if this horse really does have the stamina to, you know, to pull it all together and win the second leg, and then perhaps be the horse that has everybody talking again, that has everybody wondering whether or not, this is meant to be. This is the one that's going to break the record. And so I'm not poo-pooing that it could happen, but I think I've told this story before. My second cousin John had one of the horses that everybody talked about, Smarty Jones, as the next horse to win the Triple Crown. And boy, oh boy, did the horse come close. I mean, absolutely. There was a great chance. And Smarty Jones won two legs and lost the third leg, the Belmont, by a nose. Oh, so disappointing. And that's what happens. That's what happens. The conversation turns to, is this the one? Is this the one that's going to do it? I mean, the second, it's like this, boom, they win the Derby. And then automatically the conversation turns to greatness. Is this the horse? Is this the horse that's going to do it? Is this the horse that's going to shatter that 1978 record that was set that nobody or no horse has been able to change? All right, so I said we would go to the mailbag, and boy, oh boy, did we get a lot of mail over the weekend. And, of course, we got a lot of mail over the weekend because there was so much that happened. But in particular, what happened in Boston with the police officers being charged really weighed heavily on the minds of a lot of people. So on that note, let's check the mail.
The mail! The mail is here!
Ooh!
Yes, indeed. And Jay is our first one up. Jay in Illinois says, Kate, I like the show. I got to tell you, I've been listening to all kinds of commentary about what's happened in Baltimore. Bottom line here is we don't know for sure. Of course we don't. The specifics of what happened with Freddie Gray. It's unbelievable, some of the footage. And when you first see it, you think, wow, what are they doing? This guy's back is broken in half. Then you hear other stories relating to Freddie Gray on both sides of this. So it's really hard to get a great feel and understanding of what happened with the officers and what these convictions are all about. Do you think these convictions are just? Well, I think that we don't know enough. This is the problem that we're jumping to. So if the prosecutor files, you know, charges these six officers, and the six officers, by the way, three of them were black and three were white, it's not going to be easy, first of all, to just think that these convictions are going to just drop out of thin air. So I would assume that this prosecutor feels like she really has massive evidence or enough evidence to do this anyway. But I mentioned before Alan Dershowitz thought that this is crazy. There's a lot of holes in this. And there are other legal experts who are saying the same thing, that the state's attorney, Mosby, is out of her mind with announcing these charges on Friday with the city, not because the city's in turmoil, but because it's not justified, that there's not enough there to do it. You know, you'll have to have a jury convict police officers of murder and manslaughter. It's not going to be easy to do that. And what they're saying is he suffered that spinal injury, the grave spinal injury, because that's what killed him when he was arrested and put into that van where he was handcuffed without a seatbelt. There's all of this conversation about the seatbelt and the transportation in the van. And the prosecutor said, listen, to the people of Baltimore and the demonstrators across America, one of the quotes, because I watched as she was saying this, I heard your call for no justice, no peace. Your peace is sincerely needed, though, as I work to deliver justice on behalf of this young man. So she brings charges less than 2 weeks after his death, and she said her decisions, and she's from a law enforcement family, is that nobody's above the law. But you have all kinds of people, by the way, with all kinds of ideologies, questioning her impartiality, accusing her of rushing to judgment and saying she should recuse herself from this case in the first place, and that there's not the strong evidence there. You know, they're irresponsible, the charges, and the second-degree murder count was even filed against the van's driver under this legal principle that they call, as my brother explained it to me, a depraved heart. So the decision to file charges was made not based on, some are saying, justice, but on crowd control. Like, this is how this goes into this. If we've, this is the way to control the crowd, which would be outrageous if that were, you know, the case. So when the announcement of the charges happened, did it quell the crowds? And the answer is it didn't really change the mood of the city from people are outraged to they're relieved. So we'll see what happens if they get a conviction, if there is enough evidence of that, and what the jury will decide to do. For example, with the van driver, did he act recklessly enough that he knew it would take this guy's life? I'm going to say no on that. I'm going to say that's not the case. With the police officers, I don't know, because what are the specifics of it? What are the specifics to charge them with you know, manslaughter and murder? And looking at some of the holes in general, there were holes in what happened to him when he got in the van and the second stop and all of that as well. So the video evidence is the thing that's crazy. They don't have any visual evidence at all. So no visual evidence that the officers beat him up. And I think you're going to have experts that they'll call that are going to disagree on whether he was seriously injured when the officers pinned him to the sidewalk and cuffed his hands behind his back. You'll have experts that will say yes and experts that will swear no and give reasons why. And, of course, Gray was recorded asking for medical assistance when he was being lifted into the van, and his feet were dragging behind him. So that part certainly wasn't good. But the rough ride, and that's the term they keep using, the quick stops and the turns and all of that, and how he was slamming around in the back, which was initially what the witness said. He thought he was doing it on purpose. Wow. So I went into a rabbit hole. Quickly, let's throw out a couple more. This one from Frank, who listens to us in Sarasota. Kate, we love you here in Florida. And I got to tell you, people are really disenfranchised with what's going on in this country. And now to see the happenings in Baltimore, I feel sorry for all the people in Baltimore. And I can only imagine after building that city up to watch it being torn down. People need to have patience and let the system sort it out, because justice will prevail. If this was heavy-handed and these officers don't deserve it, they won't get the time. If one or two of them do deserve it or something can be proven, then they should be punished. And I think you have to let this play out is the best scenario here. This one from Big Al, who says, Katie Kate, what a weekend. Wow, Floyd Mayweather, we knew that was going to happen, and the Kentucky Derby. And thumbs up, in a sense, to the prosecutor who acted swiftly and did what she thought was the right thing. However, I don't believe the jury is going to convict those police officers. And I think it was more about trying to calm the fears in that city that clouded her judgment somewhat. Think of that what you may. All right, remember, you can always email us, samaritantonight.net. Thanks for listening.
John Huebner from Midas Resources. Are you tired of watching your hard-earned assets dwindle away? As government spending is out of hand and the Federal Reserve is creating in excess of $20 billion a week, are you tired of stockbrokers gambling away your hard-earned money? Is this market a setup for a crash greater than 1987? Too many of today's policies resemble those that led to the collapse of 1929.
This is John Huebner, and that was me in 2007. And we all know what happened when the subprime credit bubble burst. By March 2009, the dollar lost 50% of its value. The entire U.S. banking system was on the verge of collapsing. Like all financial problems of the past, is history about to repeat itself? Call me, John Huebner, at 1-800-686-2237, extension 129, before it's too late to protect yourself. Will the oncoming catastrophe take all private IRAs, 401ks with it? There is a way to protect your hard-earned assets. Call me, John Huebner, at 1-800-686-2237, extension 129.